Okay, you ready?
Moving along.
All my friends know the low rider.
Gotta let this ride for a little while.
Low rider is a little higher.
I got a fever. And the only prescription is more cowbell.
Cowbell, yes. You know, that is amazing how often that is showing up on various places. People are bringing it in. It's become, I won't say cult, but more people than you would believe.
I'm telling you, it's the best damn thing on Saturday Night Live.
But it's not only Saturday Night Live.
It was the best thing in 20 years.
I've seen it on news programs. Oh, and, I mean, not only Saturday Night Live, but...
Will Ferrell and Christopher Walken. Mm-hmm. If you don't know what we're talking about...
It is.
You got to check it out on YouTube. It's a Saturday Night Live skit.
Which, by the way, may be coming off of there, you know, because of the big suits that they're having on.
Suits. All right, well, we're back.
What's the lawsuits?
Viacom is suing for $1 billion, YouTube for copyright
violation.
Jump change. Well, you, of course, YouTube is bought by Google. And
right.
So the founders of Google could write a check for that and not even miss it.
Totally.
They could write a check for Google and not miss it.
Well, not quite.
But I mean, is YouTube doesn't generate like any real cash, does it?
Yeah, it does. That's the deal.
The single stuff.
They're making money. What happens is they're not making money off of the actual content, except that the content's there. They're making money off the ads. And what are you laughing at there, Curtis? Huh?
It was an inside joke.
Okay.
We would have let you know if we wanted to.
I see.
Wait a minute.
Jimmy's out of the loop on his own show. This sucks.
We all have a microphone.
It was an extra show joke.
Okay.
We were talking about
The deal is that Viacom, Sumner, Redstone, whatever, suing $1 billion, and they want to remove a lot of that stuff that is protected, and it's a big deal because there's the fair use business, and if this is also happening on with the satellite stuff too, they want to pay extra for the extra pennies.
It's all part of the money grab.
That's right. It's all about the money.
Satellite stuff? You talking about satellite radio?
Yeah, satellite radio. Yeah. Believe it or not, they don't, and internet radio as well. They want to start charging them if it happens to be in the bed, like this show right here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, they want us to pony up. Yeah, good luck.
What?
Yeah. Well, we get no donations, so it doesn't matter.
Where do they want this money coming from, and why? And why do they want
because we have used some copyrighted material on
what?
This.
We wrote all that stuff.
Well, I know.
It sounds
like the original stuff, but it's not.
Right.
It sounds enough like the original stuff that they would mistake it for that.
Yeah.
Oh, well,
that's why.
It's even talking about counterfeiting kind of thing. Like money.
No. I mean, they just
copyright infringement.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
sorry about that.
Okay. I'm moving on to court cases. Counselor Curtis is going to finally get grilled. That's right.
Jimmy emails me.
That bacon sound effect again.
Yeah, no kidding. Jimmy emails me 5 hours before the show starts.
Right.
With like 30 years worth of research.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, that's what makes the show so entertaining.
And your point is,
you're supposed
to know this stuff.
I got it.
It's like Night at the Improv.
You're
the legal improv for Curtis.
You're a licensed bar
member.
You should know every case ever made.
That's right. So free speech case divides Bush and religious right. This is the one in Alaska.
Okay.
Bong hits for Jesus. Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit about this, but now this
high school kid.
This high school kid walked across the street. It was a school function. They let him out of school.
There was a big parade going on.
It was the carrying of the torch.
For the Olympics. And the school said it was okay. It was essentially a school holiday for them to go and enjoy the parade.
Right.
They're essentially saying, no, did they call it a school function?
They are there on the case.
Well, that's what they're trying to say.
That's what they're trying to say. It's a school function.
All right.
So he went across the street from the school. He wasn't on school ground.
And
he unfurled this banner to get on TV.
Right.
Obviously.
Look at me. Hi, Mom.
And it says.
Don't get out, man.
That's right. It said, Bong hits for Jesus.
Right.
He says, and the teacher went over, said.
Principal.
The principal went, well, she, I'm sorry. Yeah,
she charged him.
She charged, whatever. That's what they say. Of course, she charged him.
Tackled him.
That's right.
It was like the
bull runs at Pamplona. Right. She comes across there. She rips it down, throws it in the trash, and suspends him for 10 days.
Right.
Because it was a drug-related inappropriate message for school kids. He's a 17-year-old or whatever it is.
He's 18.
It was against the school policy and school code and things.
Because he was the only one that, and of course, nobody smokes marijuana up there. He's the only one that actually was advocating hits for Jesus.
Right.
Because Jesus looked like a hippie.
Right. Yeah.
Man, so you'd expect it. Okay, he claims free speech.
Yeah, Jesus
wasn't on school property. And they're saying school function, we have control. And they cite several things.
Tinker.
The Tinker one was the one that actually let the cat out of the bag, right?
The Tinker one was the one that's
about 30 or 40 years ago when they wore an armband.
Right.
Like the Crimson Letter.
And they said it was okay to wear the armband? They gave him free speech?
Ultimately, yes. The Supreme Court took it and said that they could wear the armband, that the school officials would have been suppressing free speech had they not allowed them to wear
the armband. Give us a little more background on this.
Okay, the armband one was basically...
during the Vietnam War.
Right. And seven kids wearing these black armbands to the school. They wore them for
protesting the Vietnam War.
Right. And they wore the armbands for weeks. And the idea was...
White kids, black kids, doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. I think they're white kids, but it doesn't matter.
Okay.
And the idea was, though, the principal was saying this is disruptive to the school function, and therefore you can't do it.
Of course, that was in the school, actually, in class and so forth. Okay. And then the Supreme Court said, no, disrupt, we don't care.
Right.
You can wear them anyway.
Right.
So that opened...
Well, actually, they didn't say disruption, we don't care. They said there was no disruption.
Okay. And so that basically opened up the floodgates for not so much control of the on school grounds of teachers and so forth, right?
Yeah, I mean, that definitely helped the students gain some freedom there.
Well, there were some rulings on some new school newspapers.
Yeah.
They were editorials and so forth. Could the principal go in there and say, no, this is offensive to the community or whatever it is?
Right.
And a lot of that stuff, I think, went towards the free speech, right?
Not all of it.
Not all of it, right.
Some of it went, for example, if something's patently offensive, quote unquote, then they can suppress it. This entire debate is a great reason why there should be no public schools. The bottom line is...
We call them government-run indoctrination systems.
Right. And there would not, this whole entire case and everything associated with it in the last case and all the ones in between wouldn't even exist if they were just private schools.
Right. If they were non-governmental run.
Right. Because if you go to a private school, your teacher can tell you whatever they want.
Exactly.
Shut up. Yeah. You were free speech, right? Free right to speech?
Not,
shut up.
Yeah, exactly.
And by the way, wear this uniform.
That's right.
And I'm taking your property here because it's disruptive to the class.
Right. Even if it isn't, it doesn't matter.
Right.
That's the rules. You sign up, the parents sign up. You pay your money, it takes your choice.
Exactly.
If you don't like the school, you yank them out, you put them in another school.
You leave.
That's right.
But because now we've come into this weird era of the government controls...
Monopoly.
A huge amount of the education in this country.
Right.
Now, it sort of runs up against the idea of the Congress or the state making a law which runs contrary to the rights that are guaranteed that they won't make laws against.
Right.
And so...
No, wait, that's kind of convoluted. Okay. Play that again.
Well, if the state here is making a law which basically, in some way, affects free speech, the law is you have to go to the school.
Oh,
and,
right.
And also the law is these schools have rules, and the rules are going to be... whatever they're going to be, and they're going to run contrary to your rights, and you don't get a say. And I mean,
of course, the question obviously has been, at what point do children get rights, so to speak? That is below the age, as you know, that there's a big, I don't know if you call it a gray area or not, but you know, an 8-year-old, 10-year-old, 16-year-old. I mean, at 18, of course, you're reaching majority, but prior to that time.
Well, what they found is that the kids have all the rights that the adults have. But you see, remember, these rights are what they are is prohibitions against state action, state and congressional action. And they're not prohibitions against school action. And so it wouldn't matter if they were private schools.
Right.
But they're not. They're public schools. And so you would think that there's got to be some oversight to these government institutions. Because, I mean...
Well, it's interesting now. What's interesting about this is that Ken Starr is arguing for the government.
Right.
And the government wants to say, look, she could have torn it down.
Right.
And the and of course some anti-drug people have showed up and said that this was a, you know, not the good message we want to send and so forth. Obviously, who's on the other side? The American Civil Liberties Union. A lot of people don't like that. And the and then some kind of national coalition against censorship. And the American Center for Law and Justice, founded by the Reverend Pat Robertson, interestingly enough, is you'd think you might kind of wonder why the Reverend Pat Robertson is saying that this his free speech is okay.
It's so, because they don't want the schools suppressing the type of speech that they want,
right,
to
exactly,
promote in the schools.
Right, that makes sense. So anyway, the deal is that this Tinker case apparently is the one, reminds me a little bit before. This is the one that is the controlling case in this. I suppose that both sides are going to cite this Tinker case.
They have. Both of them are saying that Tinker is valid law. And even Ken Starr saying Tinker's valid. Uh-huh. He distinguishes Tinker. He says that this case that we have now, the Bong Hits for Jesus one, was disruptive.
I see.
And the teacher made a judgment call.
Of course, most of the disruption, it seemed to me, was the teacher.
Well, it was.
She was the one that marched across the street and tore the damn thing down. It would have gone away without that.
And Souter hammered Ken Starr about that.
Yeah.
He said, what's disrupted here? I mean, you're talking about a parade. There's people are throwing snowballs. I mean,
right.
Everything's chaos. The kids are allowed to go anywhere. They're not required to be in any particular spot or anything like that. And Ken Starr is saying, well, they've disrupted the message that the school is trying to send. The school
the
wants to send
the propaganda.
And of course, what the kid said, what the kid says, what it didn't have any. He said, of course, nothing to do with drugs.
Well, they argued that the message can be interpreted in different ways. I mean, bong hits for Jesus. That's all it said. It didn't say give
smoke
Jesus
marijuana.
A bong hit. Right.
Yeah.
Right. It just said bong hits for Jesus. It didn't say are bad or are good.
Yeah.
I mean, the implication is, though, that it's are good.
So the
good.
Question is, it was interesting.
Take a bong hit.
And you pray to Jesus.
That's right.
And you see ya.
And you will pray to Jesus.
And you will pray to Jesus.
You'll meet him, as a matter of fact.
The good stuff. The good stuff. Oh, Jesus, this is good. I've heard that before. Jesus, this is good.
Hey, can I get an amen?
So anyway, the question is, what the Wall Street Journal report, I had to watch it because it was on this morning, and the consensus, interesting enough, on Wall Street conservative thing was that the teacher, I got the impression that, which surprised me a little bit, was that the teacher probably had a leg to stand on, and that Tinker was not going to stand, that they was going to be modified at the very minimum.
And it might be modified. This is going to be a heavily split case, I think, even if it comes down in favor of the kid. There's,
as they say, narrowly decided, you mean?
Yeah.
Narrowly decided, yeah, 5-4.
Look, here's the deal. Once you pass the idea that the government can compel you to go to school,
right,
then
all bets are off.
Right,
at
that point, because,
much.
Look, they at school, they have to be able to tell you to shut up. They have to be able to
right.
tell you, I'm taking your property, it's disruptive.
Right.
You can't wear a t-shirt that says, teachers suck.
Right.
Or, you know, a big swastika or something.
F I mean, you,
and if, you know, either you're going to allow them to do everything like that, and then the teachers and the school really has no control over the students, or you allow the teachers to control them basically without oversight, and then you just hope for the best. And I mean, well, what's going to happen? I mean, George Bush comes out with the education proclamation and says, okay, now everybody, we're going to pray to Jesus in the morning and you can't even have a contrary message to what we're teaching here in school.
Well, they do that. That's why I call them indoctrination facilities anyway. The government run
indoctrination. Greece, the government run indoctrination, the GRIS.
Yeah, government run indoctrination system.
That's right.
There's no question about it. I mean, that's what they do. And I lost my train of thought. How can that be?
No, can't happen.
No.
This is a complicated subject. It really is, because after you get, like I said, after you get to the point of allowing the government to compel you to school, then at that point, you're dealing with school rules.
This is one of the things that's interesting is that as this stuff goes into courts, it is very divisive. When you, in other words, what's going to be solved by this? If they come, no matter what side they come down on, somebody's going to be really pissed.
Right.
And it's not going to solve the problem by any stretch of the imagination. It's not going to solve the problem. When one of the things that I've found is that as soon as something runs to the courts, as soon as people start to run to the courts for any perceived or real discrimination or whatever it is, it's divisive rather than uniting, because you're asking the judges to make a decision, whereas if the judges would just say, you figure it out, you know, you do it your own way.
Well, that's what the lower court said. They said basically, butt out, it's the teacher's decision.
Right.
They made a judgment call. They can say whatever they want to say.
Right.
And get over it.
You get over it, right. And there's not enough of that around, as far as I'm concerned. Get over it. It should be a rule as much as anything. As I've said before, one of the things that scares me a little bit is that of the three branches of government, we've always counted on the courts to be the bulwark against intrusion by the executive and the legislative branches. And once they're in cahoots with the legislative and executive branches, all bets are off. I mean, that's the road to tyranny. As Frederick von Hayek, the book you should all read, if you even read the Reader's Digest version called The Road to Serfdom by Friedrich Hayek, and you can even get a little Reader's Digest condensed version. Matter of fact, they have a cartoon version of the damn thing.
Matter of fact, if you donate to the Jimmy Doan Show, you'll get one.
That's exactly right. That's right. You'll get one. That's right. And in fact, they're not that easy.
It may
to
be
get.
Photocopied and...
Well, no, actually, it's in the public domain, I believe.
Oh, really?
I'm guessing. No, maybe it's not. No, it's still under copyright. Mm. So anyway, to bring this point home, in Maryland, they are they want to pass a law in Maryland that for truancy, in other words, if you don't go to school, we take away a driver's license, which I thought was kind of interesting. They have 24 states apparently have states enacted policies that tie student attendance or achievement to the privilege of driving. But now they're going to say more than 10 days or something, if you skip school, they can yank your driver's license. Now, they're obviously, if you're over a certain age, it's not going to matter. But basically, you're talking about kids that are 16 or 17 years old, and they're going, this is yet another, in other words, it's not enough that you're compelled to go to school, but now they're going to really...
Well, they reach into your private life with
they
it.
They certainly do.
I mean,
do.
Here you are off school campus, and they're preventing you from driving.
Right. If you have a job or something, too bad.
Right.
And this is one of the things that brings it home. It says Levi, whoever this person is, Levi said she searched for a legislative solution onto the soaring truancy problem in her county, where the attendance rate last year was the state's lowest after the city of Baltimore, according to the city of Baltimore. While the state punishes parents who let children skip school, criminal penalties can include as many as 10 days in jail or $50 a day. There are no laws that punish the students. I mean, can you imagine that the school is so bad that they have to pull out the threat of arrest by the sheriff? And now it's not enough that they can take the sheriff, that they put the parents in jail for 10 days and fine them $500, you know, or whatever, wherever, $50 a day. But now they're going to say, okay, kids, we're going to take away your drive. I mean, you don't need to know anything else about the schools in Baltimore to know that they must be the absolute horrible pits. I mean, education is supposed to be, when you think about it, you watch a kid 2 or 3 or 4 years
old.
Hey,
we got a lot of listeners in Baltimore.
Yeah, not anymore, probably.
had a lot.
That's right. No, they want to learn. I mean, kids are the funniest, the greatest things in the world. When you're watching them, you're playing with the Legos or the chess sets even, or anything like that, 2, 3, 4, 5 years before they go to school. I mean, you talk about the joy of learning. And I'll tell you, it is a sad day that the government-run indoctrination system, they got 12 years with the kid, and they beat it out of them. They beat the joy of learning out of these kids. And this, I mean, to think that the education system is so bad in Baltimore that their truancy rate, that they have to threaten the parents with jail time and fines, and now they're going to take away the kids' drive. I mean, what's next? I don't know.
Well,
instead of fixing the system, instead of making it so that the kids would want to go to school, to want to learn, their native genetic desire to learn, and they has beat it out of them to such an extent because of the way the system works, and the stuff like this in Alaska. I mean, what are they doing here? It seems like the people that ought to be going to jail are the school board. School board.
Absolutely.
They ought to take the school board people and lock them up. For malfeasance, misfeasance, nonfeasance, nofeasance, and incompetence, and every kind of thing you can imagine. I mean, it is unbelievable to me that these people actually get paid government dollars and retire on a taxpayer pension and have this kind of result in today. I mean, you don't need to know anything else about a monopolistic system. If you take EE 101 in late high school or early college, the first thing they tell you is monopolies are bad. And yet, oh, by the way, we have a monopoly on gambling. We have a monopoly on education. We have a monopoly on guns. You know, the government has monopolies on everything, and it's the only way you can get it done. And I didn't bring up the stuff up here about the gambling, but I've always talked about that here in Florida. It's unbelievable the way that's still going. But anyway,
and it's going to get worse if this kid loses, because it'll basically mean that the administrators can do whatever they want. And then the question is, where does it stop? Like you said, is this going to stop lawsuits? No, they're going to continue
to
roll.
That's the main thing.
They are
exactly. And one other thing that you find, it's what I call whack-a-mole jurisprudence. I mean, the simple fact is, I mean, seriously, it's which reminds me, Mrs. Jimmy, when I told her about that, she had no idea what whack-a-mole was.
Oh,
no, I'm serious. I said if we get to a checkpoint, you're dead.
Right.
And she said, that's why I'm staying with you.
Right.
So there's no divorce on the horizon here.
Right.
So anyway, and there wouldn't be anyway. Oh, God love you. So anyway, but it's what I call whack-a-mole jurisprudence. And you whack one down, and two more pop up.
Well, they've got no choice. Supreme Court has no choice in this case, because their only choice is to basically say, we're not even going to think about it and not accept the certiorari.
But they obviously accepted it.
Right.
So right away, you know, there's going to be some change.
Right.
I mean, they wouldn't have accepted it with the idea of saying, we're not going to accept it.
Well, it only takes four of the justices to accept it. So
that's true.
There might not be a change. They might go back. They may say, well, Lochner.
Tinker.
Tinker's affirmed, and this case is affirmed on appeal. That is, the kid wins, and so get over it, and bye-bye.
Yeah.
And then the next case will come up. Bye-bye. The next time some student wants to wear a shirt with a girl spread eagle on it
into
the classroom.
Or, you know, it'll be one of these things where it's not immediately obvious. You know, like those tattoos when you flex
right.
your arm, it makes a different picture.
Right.
You know, or you have one of those, like a pen that we put it upside down and a girl goes naked.
Right.
You know, something like that. No, there's no question that the courts will be filled with this stuff. And the simple fact is, it's because it's not a private school.
Right. It's an amazing waste of brain power for all these lawyers to be involved in judges and court cases and millions of dollars to decide what should be administrative decisions at the school level.
Right.
But unfortunately, if you don't get involved, then you seriously could have a situation whereby you could have, well, for example, they had the case where they said that the student had to say the pledge. And the case ultimately came out that the student didn't have to say the pledge.
Right.
But
they were talking about the intimidation factor and all that, right?
Well, it was just, there was the school rule. You
right.
had to say the pledge.
Right.
And the student said, you know, no, I'm not going to. And it went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and they finally said, well, okay, he doesn't have to. You can stand there in silence if you want to. Well, so if you didn't have that court case, though, that is to say, if the court decided that they couldn't decide issues of that magnitude, that is, they were school decisions, the school made the decision and it's over, then we would have students now being compelled to make all sorts of oaths and allegiance pledges, and they would have, let's say, a rally to support the war, and they would say no dissenting opinions.
Yeah.
And you can't even, like, they say, look, they can make it so that you can't even voice a dissenting opinion to your classmate at the lunchroom.
Right.
Because it's contrary to the school message.
Right.
You can't talk about
Well, they have a lot of that now with that zero tolerance on, like when they have the little kindergartners that point the fingers at each other and they suspend them and that kind of stuff. But they said it's a gun.
And that's the kind of thing that you're going to get. Because, look, once you kick the doors open, let them do anything.
Right.
And, of course, the administrators have no accountability to the parents because they're not private. They can do anything short of beating the kid into a pulp. And that nobody can complain to anybody.
No, you're right. I mean, that is what happens when you, and I say short circuit, actually it's the other way around. You have the parents, the children, and the teachers, and that's all that should be involved
right,
in this.
That's it.
And now when you introduce a disturbing other influence, which, by the way, is the threat of force, when you introduce the government into the transaction, well, all of a sudden you've changed the matrix, so to speak, of this whole thing. And this is what's happening. I mean, it is on its face. It's amazing. And again, this comes up to the ego livelihood thing. The school boards are in total denial. They think they think they're doing a good job. They actually think they're doing a good job.
Sure.
And it's phenomenal to me if a Martian could show up and say look at this picture and say, this picture is so chaotic, it doesn't make any sense at all. The schools are totally they're as local as your public supermarket. You have no reason at all to have any governments involved in the school system at all on any level.
Right.
And they should be totally out of it. And I mean, anybody with a grain of sense, but there's been such a buildup with the unions, especially the unions are in on this thing.
It's still picking up steam. The truth is that the government is still on the roll in terms of taking over control of the schools. and implementing whatever policies they want and suppressing every other policy.
Yeah.
And this could be one more leg down the road.
And it's a big one. I mean, it's a big, strong one as far as the depreciation and as far as the degradation of the United States is concerned. I mean, it's unfortunate because these people are supposed to be productive citizens. They're not even. I would like to think that they'd be mind numbed robots, but I'm worried about the mind part. There might not be one. I mean, they're going to be jelly. They're going to be, again, you see this in a lot of times in the student demonstrations and so forth, and a lot of stuff. It just doesn't make any sense at all. It is rote. It is rote learning on very, very often. It is they're parroting things that they've heard under penalty of some kind of failure or pain or whatever it is. And I suppose it's the Goebbels thing. You know, you repeat something loud enough and long enough, people start to believe it. I'm it's the only thing I can think of. And so many people have a vested interest in, quote, the system. They don't see how it's tearing us apart.
Well, it's just so easy to justify education as being good for the children. How can you be against educating children?
Right.
But what they just totally miss is the entire free market, the entire idea that individuals get to make decisions for themselves. I mean,
well, there's going to be an education no matter what. And of course, what you're seeing here, especially like this truancy thing and the fact that you have to arrest the parents and not take away the driver's license, what the kids are learning is street stuff. It's the wrong stuff. I mean, they're learning how to avoid the system is what they're learning. They're learning how to scam the system. How to game the system. That's what they're learning. They're learning how to lie, how to cheat, how to get around it. I mean, this is not what you're supposed to be learning. This is not the moral decay starts at that level when you realize that to be dishonest is because so many of these things are on their face. When you look around and you say, somebody said, are you going to believe what I'm telling you or what your lying eyes see? And the kids, certainly when they start out, they have their eyes, they see what the hell's going on, and they hear this conflict where they hear something that conflicts with what they're actually seeing. And what you learn from that is lie is truth, truth is lie. You know, it's Orwellian. It's absolutely Orwellian.
Well, this is the more you tighten your grip, Lord Vader.
Exactly.
The more Star System.
And that's why the other.
I think we have that.
Well, that's the other analogy that I brought up is the Lord. More you tighten your grip, of course, as you know. If you look at your hand, when you tighten the grip on one thing, you get four more that pop out. And this is the same thing with the whack-a-mole. I mean, it's, you know, you whack one down, two or three come up. It's Hydra. It's absolutely like a Hydra.
We're way in, way too deep for them to change this. The only solution to this kind of lawsuits continuing is government get out of the schools. Because then it's not.
I just wonder if there would be any way that somebody could find a way to bring a court case that say that what the government teaching this anti-religion or whatever is a religion, and you're not allowed to have religion in the schools. It's government religion, you know, by government or whatever. I mean, it would be interesting to see if somebody could find a way to make that case, and then somebody would say, if that's a religion, then you got to ban all the public schools.
Can I get an amen?
That's right. Can I get an amen? That's right. Well, the only other solution, and this is what happens, of course, across the board. Again, you have to read history to understand it. George Santayana, thank you so much. But civilizations do these. They go through these kinds of cycles. And one of the unfortunate solutions, if you want to call it that, is a collapse. And I'm telling you, Jimmy Doan's telling you that's where we're headed.
I think they're going to get to the Hitler Youth before we get to the collapse.
Well, no, but I'm saying that's part. But if that collapsed, you know, the thousand right. years. Hello, when it lasted 4 years. So you know, those are not even doggy years. I mean,
but remember, that's why you need to donate to the PayPal.
so at least we can get out of town.
So Jimmy can buy the island, and then you can come visit.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right.
PayPal.
You can hang on to it'll be called Lifeboat Island. You can hang, you know,
lifeboat.
That's right. And it'll be called Lifeboat Island, and you can hang on. You might spend a lot of time on the beach.
It'll be a big flotilla of boats. We just meet out in the...
Well, what I'll do is, I'll tell you exactly what I can do, because I get them at garage sales.
I prefer boats.
Is to get these blow-up queen-size beds.
Oh, yeah.
And use them, and more of them off the beach. And we can just go out and out and out and out that. Until, you know, we encompass the entire known universe.
That's right.
So that's good.
Or all of them pop. Right.
No. That's the beauty of having them all this way, is that if one or two of them pop, people...
Yeah, you just move over.
That's right. So anyway, I'm done with that. You got any more to say on that?
No.
That's about it on.
Okay, but I got more stuff on, for SCOTUS.
Yes.
No, we got, all right.
Justices to review the limits on retail prices. Did I give you that one?
The limits on retail prices.
This is the 1911 antitrust decision that bars manufacturers from setting minimum for sellers. Bargain hunters everywhere have an unwitting patron saint they've probably never heard of. His name is Dr. Miles, but his days may be numbered. It is because Dr. Miles that anyone who has ever watched The Price is Right knows that the manufacturer's retail price is only suggested. It is an unintended legacy of that shoppers have developed the unshakable belief that if they only look hard enough, they can find the same product somewhere else for less money. But tomorrow, and this is like tomorrow, actually, the Supreme Court...
Yesterday for you podcast listeners.
Oh, that's right. Yesterday, that's right. The Supreme Court, yes, right.
Or the week before.
Or the week before. Whatever. Sometime in this temporal universe. Okay.
It's still March 25th for us.
Right. So. Tomorrow, the Supreme Court will hear arguments that should do away with the nearly century-old opinion in Dr. Miles Medical Company versus John D. Park and Amp Sons, whatever it is, a decision that meant that retailers are free to price products at less than what the manufacturer thinks they should. Dr. Miles, whose company later changed the name to Miles Laboratories, which is a famous thing, wanted to set a minimum price for his elixirs. Now, what this basically... here's the battle.
Judged.
And it's interesting because the court is going to come in on this. What the deal was that he said, look, I want you... Because these are so valuable elixirs, and fancy name brand, even Apple computers, as a matter of fact, they tell you that they have a thing where you can't advertise. They'll tell you can't advertise or you can't have the franchise.
You can't have it listed on the website. You have to have it listed at the retail price. Someone comes to the store. What you sell it to them is between you and them.
Well, what they said was
how much margin you're going to take. Or
exactly. But what Miles said was, look, this is my elixir. You cheapen the product if you sell it below $1 a bottle or whatever it was back in 1911.
The perceived value, right, exactly.
If you dump it off,
brand.
You know, if here's the deal, you can't run this stuff over to TJ Maxx and sell it at a third the price or whatever. You know,
the same thing is done with in the perfume industry as well. So.
What's that?
The same thing as far as, like you said, to cheapen it. When it first comes out, they need to control it. Now you can get Calvin Klein, Louis Vuitton, whatever. You can Brut by Fabergé.
Yeah, well, but my point is that a lot of the upscale people, especially, in order to maintain their cachet,
that's right,
want to be able to set a minimum price.
And
they can't at this point. It's illegal.
In other words, they want to maintain their margin, is what it is.
It always ends up being about the money. I mean, we know that. But I thought
So what's the deal? I'm a little confused now.
Okay, well, the deal is that they might change the rule. They might say that the manufacturers can set a minimum price.
That's right.
That if you go into JCPenney and they've got Dockers or whatever below whatever the Docker people want, they can pull your franchise and not sell you anymore.
The product should cost the same no matter where you go.
Well, or more.
Well,
or
I think
more.
they can pull your franchise
below more
because they didn't like you. I mean, that would be my thought.
Well, that's why I say they found ways around it, and of course, one of the things that they have found
that worked into the clause too.
Right. They have. Right. They've worked a lot of that stuff in.
It
goes plus and minus. I mean, a lot of people who are discounters, I mean, they might go out of business, I guess. The liquidators, right. I mean, they do liquidate a lot of stuff.
Those liquidators, those discounters are not, you know, authorized deal. They're buying stuff.
Well, it's going to be what we used to call gray market.
Right. Exactly. They're buying stuff from shops that are closing down or they're
overstocked. They bought too much.
Unloading it. So my thought is
once the manufacturer sells it out the door to the wholesaler, it's gone.
Well, that's your thought. But again, a lot of the manufacturers, the Versace people and so forth say, no.
It's not just them.
If you want to sell our product, you've got to charge, you know, $400 for this purse. And if you're not going to charge $400, you know, we know we're selling it to you for $100. We know it only costs us $10 to make it. We all know that.
So, Jimmy, we
have to maintain the cachet of the mark. And so.
Jimmy, just to clarify, do you think that's a good idea? Or you think that's a.
I believe the market would figure it out. In other words, right. I don't see the reason for the law. The point is that if somebody wants to make, look, this is called the law of the contract. if Versace wants to sell a purse for $400 and, or else you can't sell it, that's their business. I don't see the, why Congress is involved in it.
Exactly.
And one of the things is the one of the problems they're going to have here is basically they want to get rid of discounters, particularly internet discounters, Cooper said. He added that if manufacturers' actions must be challenged on a case-by-case business, the burden becomes immense. Because setting minimum prices can be either anti-competitive or pro-competitive, depending on the facts per given case. A per se rule is clearly inappropriate, and that's what this is. The Miles ruling or whatever is a per se rule. The court has shown little reluctance to relax or even reverse antitrust rulings in light of changing economic reality, and seems unlikely that justices would have decided to hear Ligon's direct challenge of the rule unless they were seriously considering a change. And there's some people saying they don't think that Dr. Miles, quote unquote, will survive. He's dead, but I mean, you know, the question is what's gonna. No, he is dead. I mean, I'm sure of that. I know. 1911. Yeah, I'm sure he's dead. So anyway, the point is that I know, right?
If he was a doctor then. He's dead.
He's dead.
That's right.
Yeah.
So the point is that a lot of the discounters obviously are saying you can't do this, and it'll be interesting to see what SCOTUS has to say on that. What do you think?
Well, again,
you seem to think that once the manufacturer dumps it out,
it's
owned by the retailer.
Jimmy, did you email this to me? By the way, I don't remember getting this article. So
you didn't.
If not, will you email this to me? That's Jack at JimmyDone.
Actually, I'll do better than that. I will hand it to you right now.
Okay, even better.
Yeah, because then he didn't have to use a computer.
Yeah.
A computer.
A computer.
A pooter. A pooter. Okay.
To me, this just seems like an attempt at the manufacturers to grab some more control over what they're doing. And I don't see why the courts would get involved, like you're saying.
Yeah, I don't either, but that's my point. Why would they get involved at all? But they are involved with the 1911, with the Dr. Miles thing. They got involved. They said... Basically, they said, manufacturers, you don't have that right to set your price. You know, too bad. Once it goes out the door, it's not yours anymore. Well, wait a minute. The manufacturer's saying, wait, that's part of our contract. You know, here's the contract. Here's the franchise agreement.
Well,
if
that's a contract agreement, if that's part of your agreement, then if you breach your contract, then there are remedies and such. And one of the remedies may be they may pull the product off of there. And I don't see how, I mean, to me, it's just all simple business stuff.
Okay, well, apparently there is there has been a way around it, because there are a lot of people that are discounting products that the manufacturers don't want them to, and they're not succeeding in stemming that, and they want to. So I don't know the answer, but we'll have to find out. I probably should have done a little more.
I'll read the Dr. Miles case. I spend most of the time on the minimum wage. And
good, because that's the next thing I want to talk about.
Okay,
this is the justices are going to hear a case on the wages of home aides.
Right.
And this is apparently the way it works is they are the babysitters and people live in helpers or whatever you want to call it, for the elderly
aliens.
Right. Mm-hmm. Are exempt from the overtime provisions of the Minimum Wage Act.
Okay.
So if you go help Mr. Elderly person and you stay there 24 hours, maybe you sleep 8 hours and the rest, according to the normal, after 8 hours, you're supposed to be time and a half for overtime. You don't get, I don't think you get paid for sleep time. I think that's exempt, even though you're there. Although that brings up another thing. I mean, if you're on call, what does that count? I wonder. I don't know. I don't know how they work.
Well,
that.
And tell you this, the fact that that you're having difficulty understanding all the different nuances just points out the idea that this should all be handled by the market. When all these cases started, and they started to regulate the wages of people and the hours of people, of workers.
Right.
Now,
this was all during Roosevelt's time, most of it, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it started back in the 30s when they really started to.
There was Baker's. There was some baker up
in New
York.
The original case was Lochner, and that was about.
Famous case.
Right. And that was about the bakers. And right. they tried to say that the bakers working more than 60 hours a week, it was just unhealthy. And therefore, and one of the.
Safety.
Well, and health was the.
Health. It was health thing, right.
Health, safety, welfare, and morals are the four things that the state can pass.
Safety,
laws.
Welfare, and morals is three.
Health, safety, welfare.
Oh, health. Okay, right.
And so, if they can tie their law to any of those things,
which they can,
most of the time you'd think they can, but that's what the Adkins that's what those laws started to throw out, was they said, this is no relationship to the health of the baker.
Right.
Get over it. I mean, the baker determines their own health.
Right.
And you can't say that just because they're working 60 hours a week that they're unhealthy.
Right.
And they even point out, they say, if we were to apply this to bankers and tax people in New York City, then you could find that working more than 60 hours or 40 hours a week, it would be a bad idea, and you could pass laws against that, and where would we be then?
Right.
And, of course, we're right there right now.
Yeah, exactly right.
Because...
Can you imagine restricting somebody to 40 hours?
Exactly. That's what they did. They laughed at that, and then they threw it out, and then they came back later. The government came back later and said, well, we still want to regulate this stuff, and it's all for the good of the people, and it's for the health and the safety of the people. And,
well, of course, they got the women involved.
Well, that was the other thing, is they... Way back when they started to do wages, they made this crazy determination. It's amazing, but they decided that employers were not on equal footing with employees. And right. They literally, in the case, it says that employers are concerned about getting the lowest wage that they can pay the employee, but the employees are more worried about keeping their job, which totally ignores the other side of the coin for both of them. Which is that the employers are concerned with keeping the employee.
Right.
And the employees are concerned with getting the highest wages for their job. And there's no reason to assume that they're not on equal footing. It's an agreement
between consenting
members. Exactly.
I'm going to digress. Not too much of a digression. Oh, God, here it goes.
No.
It reminds me of when Henry Ford was starting up. He had like 100% turnover per year because, you know, in the Ford factories, you just tightened a bolt or tightened a nut or whatever it was for 8 hours.
You got dang good at it, too.
Yeah, you got dang good at it. But, I mean, the turnover was phenomenal. So Henry Ford took out an ad and he said, I'm paying $5 a day. And the prevailing wage at the time was like $1, $2 a day. And even the Wall Street Journal came out and said, well, this is going to ruin the economy. You know, you can't do this. My God, you're paying this. You know, and the reason was to cut the turnover because people were, even though it was a supposedly not so much of a skilled job, the turnover was still killing him. So
well, he can't have somebody not show up on an assembly line.
Right.
You know.
Exactly. So, yeah, right.
That mouth teeth are done stacking up down there.
That's right. Yeah, that's
Jeffro
right.
Don't make it in today.
That's right. We got four bolts on every tire. The fifth one don't work.
Fifth one don't seem to be on there.
That's right.
With three wheels.
But, I mean, that was the market
three
responding.
Wheels on the car.
People will pay what they have to retain good help. There's no question about it. So go
right.
ahead.
Right. And these cases stand. The original case, Adkins case, which our favorite justice ruled correctly on, in my opinion, the woman, there's a 21-year-old woman who was an elevator operator, okay? And they're paying her $35 a month plus two meals a day, and she loses her job because they passed a minimum wage law. And so she sued and said that the state deprived her of her job because she wanted the job and they wanted to hire her. They wanted to keep her on. And they said... She said that they deprived her of her job without any due process. Nothing happened for her to be able to keep her job. She couldn't do it. And so, the ruling was that, yes, she was right. In fact, they had deprived her of her property without due process, and they threw out the law, and that law spawned, there was a string of cases which relied on what they call substantive due process. And then later on in West Coast Hotel, they threw that entire line out, and they basically said, well, geez, you know, the government, we like to give them a lot of deference and everything, and they thought about this, and they think that this really helps out the health of the people. And for the women, it was, they literally said that women, because of their physical stature and their maternity issues, that they were on unequal footing in the bargaining process.
Right.
Women just can't bargain equally with men.
So that was the nose of the camel under the tent. Basically, it started all was because it was for the women.
Well, it was for the minors, first of all, not minors 18 and younger, but minors, the people going underground.
Right.
They said that the health of these people required that we're going to regulate their hours down to X number of hours, 40 hours a week or something.
Right.
And that was the first group. And then they started after that, that was the nose. And then the women got involved and it was saving the children here and children there. And now it's healthcare workers. And it's just micromanaging the hell out of the entire economy.
Right.
And all the contract stuff.
Once again, it was the unintended consequences come right down the pike every single time.
And so here we are, years later, and Congress regulates practically every aspect of every job.
Yeah, because, you know, for what it's worth, Social Security and the minimum wage and all that stuff, when it first started out, it only applied to it wasn't even a majority of the people at all.
Little tiny groups.
It was the tiny groups. Now it's
special groups.
Special groups. Now, of course, the deal on this is, this is the home care people. I'm quoting from this article here. I love my work, but the money was not good at all, Mrs. Koch said in a whispering voice, noting that she often worked 3 or 4 24-hour days a week, sleeping in a client's home while hardly ever receiving time and a half pay for overtime. She was caring for an elderly person. I was going to say,
she's sleeping at the home, huh?
Yeah, no, well, I guess she was on call or whatever. But anyway, it turns out that she was what she was there is a business. You know, we will send you a home care person. We have several of them here in town that you don't hire the care person directly. You go through the agency. They're an agency. This is the people that they want to want them to pay time and a half. If you go through an agency, if you hire the home care person directly or the babysitter directly, and this is what the deal was babysitters as much as anything else, they were exempted from the minimum wage because they're kids, generally speaking, that kind of thing. So anyway, the obviously, the people that are on the side of Mrs. Koch are the Service Employees International Union and the AARP. They want to raise the minimum wage and have them pay minimum wage and time and a half for overtime for these healthcare people. The federal government, interestingly enough, and since this case is in New York, the Bloomberg administration, they have lined up against her, arguing that a victory for Mrs. Koch could greatly increase Medicare and Medicaid costs, perhaps causing a budget shortfall that would leave many of the elderly without care at all. And of course, that's what it all boils down to, is the agency people are saying, if she wins, it's going to put my agency out of business. And of course, the government is saying, some people are saying, look, if they have to pay these healthcare people all this extra money, then Medicare and Medicaid are going to go up, and the government will have to raise taxes. We already have an unfunded liability of, you know, trillions. And they're going to have to raise taxes to pay for this. Well, you can see this balloon going on. And of course, Mrs. Coker obviously got a hold of some attorney, and because the job didn't, you know, she apparently fell down, hurt her back or something. She's on dialysis 3 times a week, and her job is uninsured. She's on the dole now, for what it's worth. So anyway, the point is that the government is getting in there. And it'll be interesting to find out, because they're going to rule on this. I mean, this is going
to
be
another... way all up in there, and they'll be able to regulate those wages out the ying, because nobody has stopped this downward snowball since the West Coast Hotel case. It's just
they also wanted to pay for travel time. You know, a lot of these aides do 2 or 3 people a day, and of course they have to get in their car and drive, and of course they're not getting paid right now for the transportation, and they want to be paid the hourly wage, not just the mileage, but they want to be paid the hourly wage while they're...
Look, in the dissent in West Coast Hotel, Sutherland points out that when you establish a minimum wage with no relationship to the work product, it's basically akin to saying that if you go to the grocery store, they have to give you enough food for you to eat.
Yeah.
With no relationship to what you're doing there or anything, because you need it,
right,
you get it. And it's just...
And even if you don't need it. I can tell you what happens if you're... I can tell you that I would have gone to work for people for... I would have paid them to go to work for them in order to learn the job. And I wasn't allowed to.
And so here we are, micromanaging all the nuances of the contract with one fell swoop up in Congress.
Yeah, just one size fits all.
It's amazing, but they don't even see it. And like I said, the dissenters in that last case pointed it all out again and said,
"This was 60 years ago.
You are going off the deep end with this."
And there we
are. They even said, if you can regulate the minimum wages, you can regulate maximum wages, and then you can make the two approach each other such that you're regulating all wages, and then there's no.
And they've done that. And actually, they've done that before, and they found that every single time they've tried wage and price controls,
right,
it has failed every single time.
It just makes sense.
Exactly. Well, I thought that there's a little irony here in the end of this. And because of her condition, Ms. Koch now has her own unpaid home care aide, her son Michael, a computer technician. And she said she brought the lawsuit to help hundreds of thousands of home care workers just like her for years to come. But she also said there was another reason. I just hope I get some money from this. Last sentence, folks. Yeah. Last sentence. We're going to take another break.
All right.
Okay, we're going to take a break. Make it easy for Laura.
And I stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition, and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the streets, the traffic starts jumping with folks like me on the job from 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5. What a way to make a living. Barely getting by. It's all taking and no giving. They just use your mind. Watch him shatter. You're just a step on the boss man's ladder, but you got dreams he'll never take away. In the same boat with a lot of your friends, waiting for the day your ship will come in and the tide's gonna turn and it's all gonna roll your way. Working 9 to 5.